you have single-handedly changed our family because of Mastermind, because I felt safe enough and realized with your help, realized that it's not just about the picking up of the toys and the back talk and the productive conversation scripts. It's not about that. It's about healing myself and becoming a better version of myself and showing up and being able to be that way for my entire family. I really credit you with doing something that I literally have not been able to do with countless therapists and all the journaling and all the thinking and all the meditating and all the things. It was because of you. So thank you for helping heal what I thought was unhealable.
I think if I had just had an Avery and a Corey, like I would have been all still enmeshed with my parents and they would have been our live baby dolls. And I would have, you know, said the same kind of things that my, I think I would have just still been completely running my life by the rules of that tribe, my, you know, origin tribe versus.
All right. Well, so let me stop you and say, per usual, I think you don't give yourself enough credit. You know, you're a grower and a seeker no matter what. And I think that it's not by some twist of fate that, you know, you're where you are in your life. I think it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And a lot of self-awareness.
My name is Randy Rubenstein, and welcome to the Mastermind Parenting Podcast. At Mastermind Parenting, we're on a mission to support strong-willed kids and the families that love them.
I'm here with my good friend, Kimby, and I asked her to come and be on the podcast because we've been friends since college with a bit of a break in between, which we'll get to. But I wanted Kimby to come on the podcast because she wrote a book. She wrote this amazing book, and I just read it, and we were chatting about it for hours a few Saturdays ago, and it was such a fun little friend date. We were talking all about it, and then I said, you know what? You need to come on the podcast. We're going to talk about this for my listeners. So welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here with me.
Thank you, Randy. I'm so happy to be here. I feel like every conversation we have should be a podcast. So it's fun to actually record one. But I thought it would be fun, since I've known you a very long time, to give your listeners a little window into you that they might not know. And I would like to recall one of my favorite Randy stories, if I may.
Oh, God. Let's just say this. Let me just preface that Kimby's from LA. She came to college in Texas. We went to the University of Texas together. That's where we met. She's hook 'em horns. And now she's back in LA. And so, yeah, let's just say these are going to be old college stories. So
this isn't a college story.
Oh, it's not? Okay.
It's not a college story. So I had a stupid big fancy wedding, and Randy was a bridesmaid in my wedding. And during this big, lavish, ridiculous party, Randy came up to my new husband and I and said, "Oh my God, my boobs are so engorged." And you turn to Dave and you go, "Feel this." And he, my bridesmaid's dress, I'm so sorry, it was probably expensive and stupid, was strapless. And you had these gigantic hard tits coming out over the top. And Dave looks at me and I was like, "Go ahead." So Dave, in his fancy tuxedo, I remember him putting his hand on top of your boob and Scott standing right there and squeezing and him going, "Oh my God." And you said, "Can I please have your room key? I got to go pump." And I'm like, "Of course." So number one, I love that we're the kind of friends like that you would ask for the key to my honeymoon suite at the Four Seasons in Beverly Hills. And two, we didn't hesitate and gave you the key. All right. So party goes on. The night ends. Dave and I go up to our big fancy suite. We walk in and there are champagne glasses filled with your breast milk. And it says, have an evening toast on Alec. And by that time, the milk had separated. It was just, you know, disgusting. And I laughed so hard, and Dave was so horrified.
That's such a good one.
It was so fun.
I was the first out of all my friends to have a baby. To have a baby. I had gotten married, and then 6 months later, I was accidentally pregnant. So I had Alec at 27, way before I had planned to become a mom. So now I'm going to all my friends' weddings, and I was like, at your wedding, I think he was 6 months old. So I'm like,
married in August of 98.
Yeah. He was born February of 98. And so I, so here I am, and I'm celebrating, and I've engorged boobs. Plus the fact that, you know, in California, it wasn't so rare 26 years ago to nurse your baby. But in Houston, it still was pretty rare. In
you were
a different,
alone. You were a pioneer.
I was a little, I was in my own headspace. And I mean, that's a funny story because I guess I was just owning it from the start.
You totally were. And actually, on the subject of breastfeeding, I remember like you were a voice in my head, a very encouraging voice, because I think there are a lot of dumb things that, you know, stories that women tell each other or tell themselves, and they don't fess up to a lot of shit. And I feel like on the subject of breastfeeding, you were definitely a voice in my head about, you know, it's not easy, but it gets easier. And you can, I mean, I remember thinking like really you being influential in that way. And I had a hard time with Riley getting started and stuff. And so I do think you were like a pioneer and an encouraging voice. Like you can do it, you can get through it. It's, and you know, everybody makes their own choices, and all of these things are so fucking loaded for women, right? Like guilty, I didn't, or, you know, I feel like people are making me, so I don't mean to say any of that, but for me, you were a very positive, encouraging voice that helped me get on what was the right choice for me, which was to feed him as long as I could.
I remember with another mutual friend that we had at the time, I remember actually saying the opposite thing to her. Like she was killing herself trying to breastfeed and it just wasn't working. And she had been like, her mental health was suffering. And I remember it was like 6 weeks into it. And it was when I had Avery and she had had her daughter, and she was really, because I think, you know, it was like I became a mom first and I was a breastfeeder. And so, you know, a lot of my friends were like, I want to breastfeed too. And there's all whatever the other pressures. And this friend, I remember saying, like, you have put in the work. And at some point, if you decide, like, my mental health is more important, if this is not working, like,
well, I think that's the right conversation. Because I had that happen to me when Riley was 9 months. I was like, I cannot fucking do it anymore. I have to be done. It's not good for him. And I had that same moment too. Like, I had done the best I could with him.
Yeah. Like,
and he was
like,
starving to death. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, let yourself off the hook. Like, at some point, you got to call it. And so, anyway, well, that was a good story.
Oh my God, it's one of my favorites. It's such, it might have been my favorite moment of my entire wedding.
I mean, can we, really, we need to remember what that was like. Like people like you, I think, I heard you tell that story, I think on someone else's podcast recently about, you were talking, not that story, but you were talking about, you were talking about your wedding and, you know, here you had this, the wedding of a girl's dreams, and
well, not this girl,
right? I think that's important for people like me to remember, because as I have kids that are getting older, and before you know it, I'm going to be in that season. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not pushing for it. That's for sure. For fuck's sake, that's for sure. But I need to remember the mindset of you of having, you know, this wedding that was, that you just had to sort of show, like, this is the wedding that was destined for you, right? Like it wasn't 100%. Really your wedding. It was more your mother's wedding.
In my mother's defense, I wasn't even at a point of maturation where I ever even considered what I wanted. So I wasn't doing the opposite of what I wanted. I literally did not know I was allowed to think about what I wanted. And that's, you know, on me. So whatever, I was very malleable. It's perfect for her.
Is it on you?
At that moment, I think so. I was old enough to start knowing better. just took me a longer time.
I don't know if I agree with all that, but we can just agree to disagree on that one.
We can agree to disagree.
Okay. So let's talk about this book that you have written. Yeah. All of a sudden, it was not that long ago. And you said, so I wrote this book and it's about to be published. And I'm like, huh? What? Where have I been? What? Have you been keeping this a secret?
I was.
Yeah.
I definitely was. I mean, because one, I think, you know, so nobody's going to believe me when I say this, but you and I are not out there kind of people. I know we have podcasts and we do stuff on social media, but the truth is that we're not really, you know, out there people. And it felt very vulnerable to publish this book, but I felt like it was something I owed myself, and I owed all the time and effort I had put into writing things over the years. And it's really just essays that I've been writing for years and years and years that I decided to package into a book. And so I still don't really feel like 100%. I mean, I know it's good. I know people enjoy it. I know I'm funny. I know I can write, and still that's something I kind of just whisper to people.
Tell everyone what the name of your book and your podcast are.
Okay. So the podcast is called The Midlife. And the book is called Fuck This: Practical Advice to Get You Through Your Midlife. And really, my position has been is that this is a universal experience that humans, men and women, go through in their, you know, mid to late 40s, where you really start questioning everything. And I do believe it is the second adolescence where you just kind of take a step back. And I think you do reassess everything. But what I see, what I think is that I think women get it wrong. And I think when they reassess everything, they don't realize that, you know, the call's coming from inside the house, and they start picking apart all these things in their lives, like what career they did pick, what career they didn't pick, you know, what their kids are doing, what their kids aren't doing, what their husband is, you know, whatever that relationship looks like. And I think the truth is that you have a huge opportunity to decide what kind of life you want and put the pieces together in a really harmonious and beautiful way and have a great life if you're willing to be self-aware and honest with yourself. And this book is kind of just like my very direct, tough love, sailor language, not politically correct, but compassionate and loving in a weird way, way for you to just get your shit together. Because I think we are all, you know, capable of so much if we take the responsibility for it.
Well, I think the thing that's going to be most relevant to parents who are listening to this, who maybe are in the little kid years or the elementary years or even the middle school years. And I will also say, can be still in those years too, because she has a very big gap between her second and third child. She has three boys. How old is everyone? Tell everyone how old everyone is.
Riley's 23 and a college graduate, and Aiden is 20 and a sophomore in college, and Tyler is 12 and in the sixth grade. So still in the shit, friends, I understand. But I also know I'm a totally different parent because I'm a totally different person. And so if my book is like a little bit ahead of where you are right now, I like beg you to read it now because it can be so much easier and so much more fun and so much better.
I remember when my kids were little, going out to dinner with Scott, and I was so immersed in my role as a mom, right? Like I finally
It's your full identity.
It was my full identity. Not that I would have totally admitted that.
Of course
but,
not.
But really, I don't think I would have. I think I was reparenting myself, essentially. Like, I was going to do it differently. And this also, I wouldn't have admitted. I was going to do it differently, damn it, than it was done for me. I was going to be the kind of parent that I used to watch on television and all of my fictional families that I was I think, dissociating and living vicariously through. It's so weird, the shows that I, like when these shows would get canceled, I felt like a family member just died. Like they were my fictional families, right? And so I think it was like I was now creating the family that I had always wanted. And so I threw myself into it wholeheartedly and I was obsessed. And I mean, to the point that that's why I do what I do now, because 25, 26 years of freaking studying and self-helping and trying to figure my shit out and do it differently for my kids, there was a big learning curve. Like I had a lot to learn. And so I was so in it. And you know how I can go down rabbit holes and become such an extremist and so obsessive. So it's all I thought
about.
Well,
you're a very good student. You're a very good student.
I have such a curiosity about whatever it is that I'm curious about. And so I was so obsessed with learning and doing and creating. And I remember being out to dinner because I was like, oh, you have to have a date night. That's really healthy for your children to have a strong marriage and a date night. So we go on our little date night, and which really was just a night during the week when I didn't have to do dinner and bedtime. Like I'd hire, you know, a great sitter, and I would get home and my kids would be in bed. And so I got to skip that whole, like, you know, witching hour. It was a break. And I thought it was great. So we would do that on Wednesday. We'd usually go exercise and then we'd have a casual bite or, you know, do something. And then, but I remember we'd be sitting at dinner and here I am with Scott. And the truth is like, I really like him. You were just with us in California last summer. Like you came out to see me for the day and he hung around with us most of the day, right? Like,
but it felt like, fine. It felt fun.
Yeah. It's fun. We have a real friendship. We have a similar sense of humor. Like we really like each other. And I remember being at dinner with Scott and thinking, okay, I shouldn't talk about kids. And I'd like be searching for something else to talk to him about, but I really didn't want to talk about anything else. And then in my brain, I'd be thinking, oh God, what am I going to do when they grow up? Like, am I going to have nothing?
I actually talk about that in the book because I feel like that's like one of those stories that women tell each other that, you know, you have to have all this other stuff going on because the kids are going to leave one day and you can't talk about the kids. And I actually say in the book, yeah, you can talk about the kids. They're your greatest hits. Mm-hmm. Like, I think we've been very fortunate that we've had great parenting partners. We have different strengths, but it's been a group project. Mm-hmm. And so they are our favorite thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And why is that a bad thing? Why is that supposed to make you feel like there's not other dimensions to your relationship? Which, by the way, the other thing I talk about in the book is the only way there's other dimensions to your relationship is if you're not only, you know, interesting and doing stuff that you can talk about, but if you're interested in your partner also. Mm-hmm. And like ask questions and care about what they care about and, you know, create a friendship. So I think that that's something that you and Scott have done and Dave and I have done. And so all of it is part of a rich fabric of life, you know, and how about that pressure? You felt like I'm boring. I'm not being a good, you know, this is supposed to be date night all about us, but us is also them. That's not a bad thing.
Well, he didn't want to. I think though, the difference with us is that Scott didn't really, he wasn't as into it as me. He wasn't.
Then, but don't you think he's so into it now?
Well, now, but I will tell you, we're not sitting around talking about the kids all the time anymore. I mean, I only wanted to talk about the kids, but he wanted to talk about freaking real estate, you know, or whatever deal he was working on. He wasn't that into it. He was into me. He was into me. So he was going to talk about whatever I wanted to talk about. But I could tell I wanted to talk about the kids and he really wanted to talk about himself or me or anything else. And so there was a bit of a disconnect. And I think that when I started my business and then all of a sudden I became sort of my newest obsession was talking about all the things I was racking my brain in terms of figuring out how do I do this work and all the, you know, freaking marketing, which I'm done talking about marketing, but I, cause I just hate it. But when I started moving into the business stuff, then we started talking a lot about business, I mean, he wants to hear about the kids and he wants to catch up. But even to this day, I think I'm more interested in talking about the kids than he is. You know, but the bottom line.
But you have a dynamic. The thing is, I think that it is multidimensional, and that and there's not a recipe. And that's the weird thing about, you know, most parenting advice or most life advice. It's like, it kind of makes you feel like if you don't do it this way, you're doing it wrong. And that's bullshit.
Yeah, total. Total bullshit. Because the only thing, I think the only recipe is what you brought up at the beginning was the self-awareness piece. That worry that I had, like, oh gosh, when these people grow up, what do I have? Like, what if these are the best years of my life? And then all I'm doing, it's like people that peak in high school and all they do is chase back. They're like, oh, remember high school? And you're like, yeah, like stop. No, I don't want to remember high school.
They don't evolve, right? They're still the same person. So that was the best place for that version of the person. So of course that's all they can hang on to.
Well, and that's what I was worried about. I was like, what if I'm that person? Like, what if this is my high school and all I'm doing is spending – because this feels so purposeful and meaningful, and all I want to, and I'm obsessed with these people, these three people that I'm raising. And what if 20 years from now, I'm just remembering these years right now, and I have, like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I don't know what else interests me right now. And so I was really worried that I was just going to be this one-dimensional person, and I, like, this is it. You know, and so
yeah, but that's the problem, right? Is that is that I think we're kind of programmed to believe that there's some like achievement or end point where you are, you've grown up, this is what you are. And I think that's a complete fallacy as well. I mean, the truth is I think, and I might change my mind in 10 years and I'll have a podcast called The Elderly. I don't know, but I think the whole point is that you keep, the fun part is, for me, that I have decided that I will never be cooked. And that's what's so fun. Same. I can't wait to see what else iterates. I can't wait to see what other path this brings me down. Mm-hmm. So it's so freeing. And I don't have to have decided what it is. I mean, I think your relationship, I mean, we know a lot about each other as mothers and our children and things. And I think what we both have experienced is the evolution of those relationships. And I, for one, was never somebody that was like, oh, I wish they were still little, because I've just liked them better and better in each of their next versions, even though they're filled with challenges. Mm. It's never easy, but I think we both have allowed the relationships to evolve, and that's so fun.
Yeah, except for ninth grade. I hated ninth grade. That was the only year.
You hated it for all of them?
I think I just hated ninth grade. I didn't hate them. I mean, I loved them, but I didn't necessarily like them in ninth grade.
And I'm not saying it's all, you know, farting rainbows and stuff.
I didn't like me in ninth grade either. There's something about ninth grade. Probably in my mind, ninth grade is when it all I think it reminded my body probably of when I became a full-fledged teenager. And that's when, you know, and that's when it sort of went off the rails for me for a while. And that's when I got addicted to smoking. Now I can say, thank God, when I was a teenager, I was out there, you know, living my own life and getting out of my household and having some fun and doing risky shit and all that stuff. But I think for so many years, because especially the smoking, it was the monkey on my back, that it was like ninth grade was when I could have gone one way and I went another way. And then I had to spend so many years trying to clean so much up. And so
yeah, but if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have had cigarettes to smoke on the sun deck. So, you know, you have to look at the positives as well.
It was a good time. I know. I wish I didn't love it as much as I did.
I love to actually fess up to the fact that I don't consider myself to have ever been a smoker, but how many cigarettes did I smoke of everybody else's college?
But you're not. You know what? I'm sorry. If you're a real smoker, you're buying your own freaking pack. You're not just bumming cigarettes.
Only during a breakup did I ever buy a pack of cigarettes, and that was it.
Yeah, you're lucky.
No, but
you're
I know. Lucky. So it was like more. Yeah. It was more your fear of your children having like a moment, like a crossroads, and you, I think maybe were worried that you weren't going to put them up or be able to put them on the right track. Like you were somehow
I think it was unconscious. Mm-hmm. I think it was unconscious. I think there was a body memory of this is where, you know, there was a fork in the road and this is where I went to the super wild side that led to, you know, lots of destructive patterns and behavior. And I think in me, it was like, I wanted my kids to have such a different childhood that I think it was like the pressure was on. I didn't consciously know it. All I know is that for each one of my kids, that ninth grade year had me angsting the most.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I agree. They just, yeah, the relationship improves. You know, I was just saying this, I think, on the podcast I just recorded. Everybody focuses on the 18 years that they're in your house.
You don't even know what's coming.
And the thing is like, God willing, we're going to be parents of adult children for far longer than the time that they lived in our house. And when you do things like figure out who you want to be when you grow up beyond them, and when you live your own life and move into that next chapter, I feel like your relationship with your kids has the opportunity to deepen, because I think kids that do have, I think my worry back when was real and probably important, because I see this with moms I know in my personal life who don't have their own life. And even though their kids have grown up, they still, if you talk to them, it's like, hi, how are you? Where have you been? What's going on? All they can talk about is where their kids are, what their kids are doing. And I'm like, wait, like how long ago did they leave your house? And who's going to law school? Who's dating who? And who's got what job? Ugh, that kills me when they have to start talking about what their kids do for work. And it's like, well, what are you doing? Like,
an age-old story, right? Since they started, you know, going to preschool, is when parents take their self-worth and self-esteem from what the child is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And like what school they go to, and, you know, like what license plate you can have, what bumper stickers you can have. And that, the truth is that is really unfulfilling for people, for women. But
really again, unfulfilling. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I think that they're doing it, you know, right. You know, you and I are very detached from the success of our children. Like I just feel like I'm here to love them. It's like, I read something you wrote once. I don't know that I fully disagree with it. And I also don't know that I fully researched what you said, but I like the sentiment. Like you say, don't ever say I'm proud of you or something. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, And it's kind of true. It's like you don't praise the outcome. You praise the journey.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I think, you know,
telling someone you're proud of them, there's this concept my coach talked about recently that I think is so interesting. And she talks about the power over versus the power with dynamic and how in our society, in a capitalist society, there's a lot of power overing. Right. Mm-hmm. And and power overing always involves, you know, somebody is in a more powerful position and there's usually some type of control. It doesn't truly give each person, I think, the agency and the autonomy that is going to help us grow into, you know, the most alive versions of ourselves, let's say, right?
Yes.
That back to that fulfilled question. And so I think telling your kids, and my kids actually gave me a really hard time about this over the years, because that's what parents tell their kids. I'm so proud of you. Your kid comes home with a good grade. They worked hard on something. They want you to tell them, I'm so proud of you. And I would never say it. And I remember one time Alec was like, Mom, just tell her that you're proud of her. Just say it. Just say it. I'm like, I hope that she is so proud of herself, because that is really something. And he's like, just freaking just like say it.
There was actually a recent study where I think, and we were discussing it, weren't we? Like where they had kids and they told them, some of the half the group, that they were they had done a really great job. Their outcome was really great. And other kids, they praised the effort, and then they repeated this experiment. And the kids that had been praised for the outcome ended up doing worse than the kids who had been praised for the effort. Mm-hmm. They actually exceeded the first group. And mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the same thing.
It's very growth mindset.
I keep speaking to stop deciding what you're going to be when you grow up as if that's some finite destination. It's who are you growing into being? Right. And same thing with kids, and what tools are you using better, in your life, and, what parts of yourself are you improving? And it's always, the ing of a word, mm-hmm. because it's a constant state of improvement mm-hmm. and assessment, rather than you're going to cross some finish line. Cause the only finish line you're crossing is the grave. So, mm-hmm. What are you doing between now and then?
I agree. And I'm so proud of you is that I'm power overing you. You're mm-hmm. doing these things. And now I'm proud to be your mom. I think you're an amazing human being. I want to know them. I don't want them to ever feel like they need to prove to me that they're lovable or worthy of anything from me. I want it just to be.
Well, I think the word that dominates both your and my parenting and relationship with our children is unconditional.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you're doing, good or bad, or I agree with or I don't agree with. My love for you is unconditional, and my support for you is unconditional. You don't have to prove anything to me.
And I think you're like me in the sense that, it isn't all rainbows and daisies. Mm-mm. There's times that our kids do something and we're like, what the fuck was that? enough. Or, it's not like we get to be whole humans. We get to be annoyed sometimes.
And so do they.
And yes, right? But the foundation, the love is unconditional. And that means that sometimes I can be a shithead and sometimes you can be a shithead. And we're going to boomerang back to each other again and again and again. I just feel like that is not something that people are talking that much about. I think there's so much right now about parenting, and I think I've been guilty of it as I was in my, learning, trying to do it so differently. I think there can be such a performative aspect to it all.
Totally. Ugh, vomit. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And if I think about it, I'm like, and even when I didn't think I was performing, I think sometimes I was performing,
100%.
Even for my kids, they knew when I wasn't listening. They knew when I was trying to be the mom that was really interested in whatever, super boring thing they were trying to tell me about. And then they're like, mom. And I'm like, what? They're like, did you hear what I'm saying? I'm like, of course. They're like, repeat it back. They'd call me.
I had something like that with Tyler yesterday. He started playing golf. And of course, my parents are very supportive of this endeavor. He's on the golf team. They, of course, had to buy him new clubs because, the old ones were perfect. And he comes home and I was like, how was it? Which I genuinely wanted to know. How was it? It was really a binary question. Was it good or it wasn't? Mm-hmm. And he's like, it was amazing. And he starts going on about, my new 7-iron and blah, blah, blah. And I told my mom, I was like, yeah, he's as boring as you guys are about golf. I don't care. I don't want to hole by hole.
Please no. Just did you have fun? Were there any good snacks?
Yes, 100%. And I think one thing I'm proud of and I talk about in the book and I know that you encourage also is that I think when they're little, things are very black and white and there have to be rules and there have to be this is good, this is bad, right? When they're little and you're setting the foundation. But as they grow, I think it's so important to show your fallibility to your children, that they think that you just ended up where you are and it was all easy for you. I don't know. I've had tremendous fuck ups in my life, and it's actually been extremely freeing for me to be able to tell my kids as a bad example, I kind of see this in you is exactly for me. I'm really sorry. This is something I did. I'm trying to save you from yourself. It's not your fault. Mm-hmm. And I've done this, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think that enriches the dynamic too, where you're not, like you say, power over, like we're not that better than them. You know, we're just humans having a human experience. And so are they.
That's such a good point. I think it's such a good point, but I think it's also vulnerable. A lot of people, it's like, well, I don't want to lose their respect. They're still that.
I think you gain it.
Well, yeah. We're here.
It reinforces it.
I think we're lifting the veil here. We're mm-hmm. like, yeah, this is the deal. Yeah. Like that whole old school way of thinking of you need to be the all-knowing parent, it doesn't build a true connected relationship because no one knows every – I mean, like – I think everyone listening to this podcast, if you've listened to this podcast and you keep coming back, you're a cool with it person. And you know how we all think about those know-it-all people. The know-it-all people who know all the things and who never make mistakes, who never have a vulnerable moment, who never get busted for doing some shitty thing that they wish they hadn't done. No one likes those people.
And that's not true.
It's not true. That's why no one likes them, because nobody's buying that bullshit. And our kids, they're like little truth barometers. They know mm. when we're bullshitting them. Even when they don't know, they know something doesn't pass the smell test. Right. They know. Right. So talk about when you started the Midlife Podcast and you entered into the chapter that led to writing this book that we're just whispering about, but that y'all should
don't
all
tell anybody.
Y'all should all order because you'll laugh and you'll love it and you'll love Kimby. So, and we're going to put the link to the book in the show notes. Talk about that process, because that's really where we reconnected after not speaking for how long? 15 years?
Gosh, was it that long? I mean, it's totally possible. Yeah. So again, I think it kind of speaks to what I think both of our messages are. That wasn't subject verb agreement, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That you don't really know where you're going, right? Just start walking a path and the kind of like it figures itself out. But I was just in a really bad place, and I figured if I'm in a bad place and I for many defensive reasons have an ego to protect me. And I thought, well, if I'm in a bad place, I can't only be the only one. And I started like kind of, you know, researching, reading about this midlife and this moment where I felt like things were very black and white. And I felt like I was never going to be happy again. And I was really scared of being 80 years old and looking back on my life and feeling regretful. And I felt super unfulfilled. And I felt like I hadn't lived up to my potential, right? Because I'd been told my whole life, like, you know, I was, you know, a good student and I achieved awards and I was athletic and I won trophies. And you know, there's no fucking trophies in grown-up life. I mean, there are, right? But there aren't when really you've chosen the path that I chose, which was to stop working and to stay home with my kids. And I think mostly what I was mad at myself and trying to figure out how I was going to feel better. So I didn't waste my life. I mean, I was really in a deep, dark place. Like I was like, seriously, this is it. And I was doing all those performative things because I was supposed to, but on all the committees and taking my kids all the places and signing them up for everything and, you know, making all the dinners and doing all the shopping so that they had the childhood that I would have wanted. And I got myself to a place where I was really fucking angry at everybody. Mm-hmm. Except the one person I should have been angry at, which was me. And I just started writing, and you actually said to me that, you know, when you start going into this sort of line of work, this coaching thing, really what you're doing is trying to coach yourself. And I think that's 100% spot on. And the only way I could do it was to write like I was writing to somebody else, because I've always been very good at telling other people what to do, but I don't know how to follow my own advice, right? So I think by writing to other people how to feel better, I started feeling better. Mm-hmm. So in writing, what I did then was I read my essays as podcasts. And, you know, I think it's pretty good basic advice, and people appreciated it. I mean, I think a certain kind of person appreciates it. I think there are a lot of people that, you know, don't want to look inside and don't want to take responsibility for where their life is. You're not going to like what I have to say. But I think if there's just a tiny little crack in you that's willing to maybe figure out if it's you before you blame everybody else, it's helpful. Mm-hmm. So it was COVID, and it wasn't because of COVID. It just happened to be then that I started writing and, you know, recording a podcast, and I had no grand designs for it. I learned a lot of things while I was doing it. I learned about marketing, I learned about having an online business, I learned about building a course. And what's funny about all of it is it turns out that I didn't really enjoy doing it. I enjoy writing, and I love telling people what to do. And I love when they take my advice. But
I love you.
But also, most people are really annoying. And I don't want, I kind of like have my selective people that are allowed inside my bubble. And so I'm like, I'm not cut out for this line of work. This isn't bringing me joy. You know, I just had to, and also I'm over it, right? I do think that there was an end point to my angst, thankfully. And so in collecting these essays and putting them out there in a solid format, I mean, they're there for people to use. And that's what I wanted. I just want people to feel better, and I want people to get the fuck over it. And one thing I hate about how commercial, like midlife and menopause, has been, it feels super wallowing to me. And I hate that women can do that with each other, that they like to stay, you know, in the shit together. And my whole perspective and my book, and if you go back to any of my podcasts, is about feeling better, feeling happy, building a life you love, loving the people around you, allowing them to love you, and get on with it and see what's next. So I think that's what the midlife did for me, is it's just kind of brought me to the next, you know, chapter. And I finally learned to say, like, I don't know if this is it, but this is what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't have to know. It doesn't have to be forever. Guess what? Like I exist at choice. And right now, this might be my choice. And next month or next year, I may have a different choice. Right.
Yeah. And also to sort of like, I think one thing that we as women, like, especially if you're, you know, if somebody asks you what's going on and your answer is everything going on with your kids, is like, you're really cutting yourself short. You are not, you know, recognizing everything that has gotten you to this point. It's like, even if you've been a stay-at-home mom like I was, you know, you learn a lot of things.
Yeah.
There are valuable skills that you've picked up. And I think we really sell ourselves short when we take on this completely other identity that we only exist to serve the people under our roof.
Yeah. I feel like in my groups, it's actually pretty amazing, because, you know, there's always been this whole like working moms versus stay-at-home moms, which I don't really like even the term stay-at-home moms. I haven't decided. Maybe you can come up with a better term, because
I hate it.
Yeah. Like when your full-time job is raising children, like you are working your ass off all the fucking time. There's no lunch break, you know, like
but I think similarly, even if you're a working mom, are you not a mom 100% of the time also?
Right. You are. And that's the thing. And so in my groups, that's been the most beautiful. Like, there's never been any weirdness. I would say, I think it's 50-50, but maybe it's more like 60% working, 40%, you know, working from home. Raising children. I don't have a catchier way of saying it. But I think part of why we have such, you know, nobody even really talks about it. Like, if I coach somebody about something that has to do with a job or work stuff, there's never weirdness, or it's not uninteresting for my moms who don't work outside the home, and vice versa. Like, they all learn so much. But I think it's because I was a mom who full-time, that was my job for many years. And then I started a business and became obsessed with mastermind parenting and all things mastermind parenting. So, you know, Scott would tell you that I mean, his favorite thing is when somebody acts like they're real impressed by his career and they sort of, you know, like people in our personal life, because people in our personal life, not a lot of them know that much about what I do. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them know about what he does. And mm-hmm. so, because it's more of like the typical, you know, success, whatever, like, and so people will focus on him and he'll say, no one works more than Randy. She works more than anyone I know. And I'm like, that's not true. I just have unorthodox working hours. He's like, mm-hmm. you are obsessed with the work that you do. No one works more than you. You know, like he gets offended by it. And I think because I have been both, like I can see both. And so there's no, and I guess I set the tone in my group. So there's no weirdness between moms. Like we all just come together and workshop all the things. And there's none of that competitive nonsense.
Yeah. You know? I opened the book by saying, because I worry about this all the time. You know, it's been a privilege that I, up until, you know, and it's funny what you say is like, I still think of myself as a stay-at-home mom because I work from home, but I work my ass off too.
Yeah.
But I say in the books, I worry about offending somebody, that I'm only speaking because this has been my experience. And I'm not saying, like, I think about, you know, not everybody is, you know, ever married their partner that had a baby. So not everybody is in a heterosexual relationship raising children. Not everybody is stay at home or working or, and I say there's a lot of different ways that we get to midlife. I still believe we all get there, no matter what your personal dynamics are. And all I can do is give you my, you know, perspective on things and hope that you can take something for it and apply it to you. I'm not saying it's the right way or the only way to do it. And I think that that's kind of the grace that we, both sides of that coin and all the iterations in between, have to give each other. And also you're also 100% of still a mom, even if you have some big high power job.
Well, and anybody who gets offended, like I think the truth is just the, whatever your truth is the way to go. And other people who are interested in speaking the truth, telling the truth, sharing their truth, listening to the truth, I think they appreciate the truth, even if it isn't their exact experience. And the people who are offended are, have you ever heard the one-third haters? Mm-mm. Concept. It's not mine. It's Mm-mm. actually this coach that I love. Her name is Amy Pearson. And she taught me, and it, maybe it's not hers. Maybe it's iterated from someone else. I don't know. But anyway, probably. I learned it. Right. Probably so. It's probably been filtered down a couple of times, but I love this. It's called the one third rule. And so a third of the people are your people and they love you. They're your super fans. Like anything you do, they're like, we're up for that. And then, and whether it's work, whether it's an outfit that you choose to show up in, a new haircut, whatever it is. Okay. They're down for your choices. Okay. So those are your people. And then there's a third that are the neutrals, and the neutrals, they're not really thinking about you. Like you're not really their people. They're not really your people, but nobody's like there's no hate. It's just like, we just don't really go together and that's fine. Okay. So it's sort of like the neutrals. And then there's the third that are your haters, and personal life, professional life, the people who always are going to be offended. They're going to be offended. You can try and tiptoe around, but that doesn't matter. They're going to find mm-hmm. something to hate on you for. And what most of us do, because of that fucking negativity bias that every human has, what
we
most of us
that
do.
One third.
Yes, we're so focused on the one third. So then we're like, I hope I don't offend anyone. And it's mm-hmm. like, you're right. you're gonna fucking offend them, no matter
For
what.
Sure I am.
Yes, yes, they're gonna find yeah. something to be offended yeah. by because they are not your people. And so that little hack from positive psychology, if we can all just. You have to work to override that negativity bias, but
I think you're right.
But if we override it and override it and override it, eventually we're like, oh yeah, what we focus on grows. I'm focusing on the one third that are my people. I'm just going to go full fledged. All of my bandwidth goes to the one third that are my people, period.
Well, maybe you would have told me that a year ago. I wouldn't be so bored with the midlife.
I know. You know what? You went through it and you created a body of work that helped you to go through it and process. And now it's helping other people as they go through it and it lives on. And maybe you don't have to be the one that is actively steering that ship.
I don't, because I don't want, but I'm glad it's there. And and also, I mean, just like personally, friend to friend, it's not like, you know, all the people are listening at the moment, right? I'm just kidding. Because I just talked to you like friend, but I just like, I needed to do it for me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I needed to feel that sense of accomplishment. And I think what's so interesting, and I don't know if you've had this experience too, and I joke about like whispering about the book, but it is really hard for me to still answer the question, well, what do? I'm getting better about it because it feels very like show-offy and, you know. Ugh,
try-hardy.
You know?
Yes, yeah, me too.
I should be proud of all of it and all the things that I'm working on. But because it's not, like, you can't just say, oh, you know, I work for Apple or something. I don't know. It just like, it feels so goofy to me. And I think that's part of it for women too. We're like so used to cheerleading all the people around. Like I could totally go somewhere public with you and I could just introduce you the entire time and be so happy doing that. And like, you know, shouting from the rooftops what you do. But ask me what I'm doing and be like, well, I do this and I do that. And
I know.
It's a dumb thing.
I know. It's.
I think that's part of it for us too in midlife is learning to own it. And like whatever it is that you're doing at this moment is special and important and cool and great. And it might not be the same thing in 6 months or it might be the same thing for the next decade. And that doesn't demean or any of it.
I think a lot of times also our intuition is whispering to us. And when it feels uncomfortable to talk about what you do, chances are it's because it might be to somebody who's in the two thirds that are not your one third. Mm-hmm. Because I think when somebody in your one third gets curious and wants to know more about you, and so what you do and the work that you enjoy and what you're into, I think it organically comes up. And so whenever it's now I'm being interviewed, what do you do? Mm-hmm. I think my intuition, that's why I pretty much avoid it at this point, because I think my intuition is saying they don't get to know. They don't need to know.
Kind of reframe though. Like you don't get to know.
Yeah. You don't get to know. You don't get to know. It's like I'm trusting that intuition more and more and more, where it's like, if
so
the
what
person,
do you say? I'm just like, curious. So if like, they're if you're like in a new situation, they're like, oh, Randy, what do you do?
Oh, I know what Scott does. Do you work? And I'm like, oh, uh-huh. Yeah, I do. I've got my own business. What? Tell me more about you. I usually just turn it back on them. And they're like, oh, well, what do you do? And I'm like, I don't know if you have a kid that is like that kid that everybody's like, that's a rough kid. That's a hard kid. Or if you had a sibling or if you were that kid, I help parents with those kids. Those kids are my jam.
I love that answer.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with those kids. So I help parents
that's
who
a great answer.
are trying to figure out one of those delicious kids.
But I love that because you didn't have to say the word podcast. You didn't say the word coach. You didn't say the word. I really love that. Good for you.
Yeah. I think I've only gotten this comfortable with talking like that as I've sort of felt more and more and more confident in what I do. Like I've been doing this for a long time. Like I'm 10 years in business at this point. Mm-hmm. And at this point I'm like, yeah, I don't have anything to prove to anyone. I love what I do and I'm helping people. I'm not trying to get famous. I'm not like, I don't have some, like there's many years where I was like, what is this going to turn into? And now I'm like, no, I love working in this small boutique way. We just had a conversation about this recently where Kimmy was like, don't say it's small. Why do you have to say it's small? And I'm like, intimate. I like working with people in an intimate way. I can deal with that. You know, I do. So I'm going to say intimate. I like truly getting to know. I don't want to have some big, giant business and I have hundreds of customers and I have moderators answering all the questions. I want to dig in and know what the hell is going on in your house, in your house, in your house. And I'm only, you know, I'm one person. And I mean, obviously I have Lindsay who works with me and helps me run things, but like, it's really important to me to know people. So I've gotten like way, I mean, in the last couple of years, I've been scaling down rather than scaling up because I've gotten really clear about the way I like to work.
Don't you think that that's like another gift of midlife though, too, is that you can sort of annihilate your ego, right? Like you don't have to give yourself a job title. You don't have to say you're a that you're running this kind of company. I'm this kind of coach. I, you know, have this many people in, you know, already recorded, you know, programs or whatever. And I think that that's like so freeing and fun about the midlife too, is that you actually can just be.
Yeah. Like, and I think a lot of the reason that I can just be is that my kids are cooked, you know, they're cooked. And I think when I was much younger, I had a low level anxiety of how's this all going to turn out? Like, I just really hope I don't fuck them up. And now I'm on the other side of it and I'm like, it's good. I feel good. And I think I have less of that sort of proving energy or, you know, deep down worry. And so there's a freedom.
But again, like,
in
what does that even mean? That they're going to turn out okay so that it looks good for you? Like, that's where that kind of weird energy came from. Cause I think that's the way we were programmed, though.
Well,
that
I don't
weird
think
reflection?
It's. For me, it wasn't that it looks good for me. It was really that, and I didn't know this, it was unconscious. I wanted so badly that I didn't want my kids to ever, frankly, think about me or blame me the way I did my parents.
Totally.
And I think it was like I loved them so much. And the thought that maybe one day they might have a lot of animosity towards me or and that was the driving force for me, was that I was like, I've got to do this better. I can't, like, I wanted to have them in my life forever. And so I
right.
was worried.
But I think
was
it was
worried.
Impossible that you wouldn't have done it better just because you're always an evolving human.
I think if I hadn't had an Alec, I think I would have done it a more modern version of the way my parents. I think I would have.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think having an Alec and it not being so easy, you know, like, and me being like.
I do know because you left him with us when he was 9 months old.
Yes. Remember how hard he was? Yes. I would love for you to end with that story.
Yeah. So Dave and I don't even know. Well, we must have been married because he was nine months old.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't fragile. Like he was, you know, a baby. Mm-hmm. And you guys were in LA for something and you asked me if we could watch him. And we had just moved into our like new house. And, you know, I was checking all the fucking boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Married the right boy. Check. Live in the right neighborhood. Check. Have the right job. Check. So you said, you know, could we watch him? And I was like, absolutely. How fun. We get to play house, right, with the baby. And I've never been afraid of kids or not been able to take care of babies. I feel like I have a natural affinity for mothering, and I could not comfort that child.
Mm-hmm.
He was crying. He was unhappy. And I could not make it okay.
He cried so much.
He did.
So
I mean, and also
much.
Like, yes, but also at 9 months, like it could have been a weird separation. He didn't know us at all. And I didn't know any of those things either about kids. I just thought, oh, they're just like little dolls and you put them wherever and you get to play with them and they're delightful. But yeah, he was really, really not happy to be with us. And there was literally nothing that I could do to make it better.
Yeah.
And so much as I even like, I didn't leave him alone, but like I tried not to entertain him and like just kind of be and see if he would calm down. Nothing. I think we tried to give him a bath. We tried to play with him. We And of course, being so young and dumb and all about myself, I was like, oh, I guess I'm not good at this.
No, yeah. He was just and a then, toughie.
Yeah, he was tough. He was tough, but he's delightful now. Do you remember that time that we stayed at your house and your old house and there was a thud and I like ran into the room and he was just laying on the floor. He'd fallen out of his bed and like I was literally scared because he was just laying there. Do you not remember this? And I went and got you because I did not know what to do.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't remember. And both you and Scott came in there and you're like, he's all right. I think he slept on the floor.
Yeah, no, he was a toughie. He was. And I think if I hadn't, you know, I think this deep desire that I wanted, yeah, I wanted happy children. I wanted kids that had like this happy, delightful childhood. And so when he came to me, this little highly sensitive person who felt everything in such an intense way, and I had to hold him all the time. I had to wear him all the time. I that's why I think I started reading so many books because I was like, what do I need to do to make him happy? And I was trying to learn as much as I could learn because I couldn't figure out. Like, I was like, is there something wrong with him? Is something hurting him? I could not figure it out. And so that is what led me. And then as I started learning about child development and all the different things, I think I started realizing none of this stuff was ever done for me. Like, I was never put to bed or, you know, cared for in this way. I mean, really, like, there's been so much that I've had to teach myself as an adult because, you know, I know we had dinner every night and that there was that routine. But other than that, we did not have like a traditional situation going on. We were not cared for in a traditional way. And so I had to learn so many things, but I think if I had just had an Avery and a Corey, I think I would have been like, yeah, like I would have been all still enmeshed with my parents and they would have been our live baby dolls. And I would have, you know, said the same kind of things that my, I think I would have just still been completely in that, you know, running my life by the rules of that tribe, my, you know, origin tribe versus.
All right. Well, so let me stop you and say, per usual, I think you don't give yourself enough credit. And I think that, you know, you're a grower and a seeker no matter what. And I think that it's not by some twist of fate that, you know, you're where you are in your life. I think it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And a lot of self-awareness.
I think the stars aligned
for me. I don't think it's external.
Yeah, I don't think it's external. No, I do. I do think it's internal. I would agree with you there. Okay, obviously we could just talk.
I know, but
all
as
day.
You know, I'm starving at this point, so
I know.
I need to go feed.
You need to go feed. You need to go feed.
And also, can I just tell you about the parenting that never stops? I also have to rush to the airport because Aiden decided that it's the end of spring break and they're in Mexico and they're supposed to go back to Bloomington today, but then he and his roommate, who's also from LA, have decided that they're awfully close to LA, being on the west coast of Mexico and Cabo, that they should just come home and bring three of their friends with them. So my life turns on a dime and going to the airport and
that's fun.
All the people and feeding them and housing them. And then in those moments, I think, I'm so lucky that I can do that. And the rest of the things that I had planned for myself and my world takeover will wait.
And I'll end with saying, how about how he wants to come home?
I know. Right? I love that so much.
Right. I never went home for more than a week once I left for college. I was like, get me the fuck out of here. So the fact that
Dave said to me, when's the last time we had dinner at your parents' house? I was like, yeah, I don't remember. I don't even still want to go home. So.
Right. And he's like, oh, I'm in college. I'm on spring break and I want to come home. I'm close to home. I want to come home and I want to bring my friends to my home. Like that, to me, that's the dream. That's living the dream. So,
yeah. And so in the reverse of that is that I'm living the dream because I have a friend like you that I can call and be like, my kid's coming to your city. Can he stay with you? And you're like, yeah, sure.
Yes. So. Thank you. It's my favorite. Yeah.
Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for being here.
This is fun. Always
fun. All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening today, guys. I hope you picked up some tips, tools, maybe some baby steps for creating more balance and boundaries in your life. And I just wanted to let you know, if you want to continue moving the needle forward in creating this for yourself, having a happier household, I want you to go to my website and check out mastermindparenting.com. We have 3 beginning programs, and if you need some accountability and more support, then please look for the one that would be a good fit for you. And as always, we're on all the social channels under Mastermind Parenting. On Instagram, it's Mastermind_parenting. Periodically I do pop up on different Instagram lives, Facebook lives, where I give you teaching and coaching, and I love engaging with you live to help you help your strong-willed kids so that they can feel better, because when they feel better, they do better. And, I love, love, love getting to know you guys. So thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Super, super appreciative.